Before we call for public comment, public participation, I want to acknowledge that last week it was Teacher Appreciation Week, correct?
Correct.
And, oh, I'm sorry, roll call. Right there. So excited to acknowledge that. I'm sorry, Mrs. Pope, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Warhol?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Thank you. So I want to acknowledge, again, last week was Teacher Appreciation Week for Teacher Day. Churchill, actually, this week is having their Teacher Appreciation Week for the different, a ton of things going on. An organization meeting last week, and it wasn't a, I guess what I would say, regular business meeting. I just wanted to acknowledge, thank you to the teachers and our work and the stickers that we see on, you know, kids' papers and stuff. And I just want to tell you, it took me longer to make this. Anything else I did today, because it took me so hard to go. So, thank you to teachers for doing that, and being our work. That's appreciation to all teachers for contributing. It's all the parents at the schools last weekend, which is why I'm doing this to both the teachers as well. Thanks to this time, we'll be live streaming audio during the board meeting, hence the microphones. In order to provide the listeners with the best quality audio, we ask the members of the audience who wish to make public comment, please step up to the microphone at the podium, see the microphone just as we do over there. And it is easier to hear you sit with the velocity field, which is great. I'd like to remind members of the audience the speakers should identify themselves. Complete a public participation form, main form, and limit your comments to 2 minutes plus. If your comments have substantial within the necessity of others, we'd ask them each to set our time that you please forego, making them that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. Please note everyone for your comments and so that they are substantially just to please make them. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the district or your community should be initiated privately with an appropriate district representative. Profanity, any interruptions, other interference with the orderly conduct of a business meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate district or staff representative for a response as a response is warranted. Is there anyone who would like to address the board at this time?
Thank you. Jeff Cooper, going on. Before we hear tonight's community engagement presentation with Unicom ARC, I have some concerns to share. This firm has had history with District 41, with involvement back around, I believe, the time of the 2001 referendum, when the taxpayers received a royal screwing by District 41 and are still paying for it. It seems that Unicom ARC's business is essentially about working with school districts to put something over on the taxpayers of that district. Of course, the district's taxpayers pay for the opportunity to get screwed over. Before we hire and pay Unicom ARC for being facilitator and whatever else, I ask the following. 1. Can we make a solid attempt to pick a community member as a facilitator? This was brought up in the meeting Wednesday night by Pete Latisek, and I second it wholeheartedly. 2. If Unicom does get hired, committee members should write the report with all signing off on the results. This report should not be written by a third party with questionable motivation. A final word to Unicom. I've been a community member for over 18 years. I do not appreciate what went on in 2001. I do not trust your company's past involvement with our district. Realize that you'll be looked at through this lens. The communications with District 41 are apt to be FOIA'd. To Dr. Gordon, the smart play would be to steer clear of this. You don't want to get lumped in with Pi Irwin. Thank you.
Mr. Cooper, I'll ask to speak. Next.
Mr. Madden.
Thank you and good evening. My name is Dan Wagner, a proud father of two District 41 students with a third who will start kindergarten next year. The district is very fortunate to be blessed with terrific resources, especially from a financial perspective. And as parents, we should applaud the district's commitment to provide innovative education and learning opportunities for our children. In fact, parents may not always like the money that's spent on things like consultants and cross-state sharing the best practices, but from a conceptual standpoint, it's hard to argue that the district is not living up to its motto to ignite passion, inspire excellence, and imagine possibilities, at least from a program and curriculum development standpoint. What appears to be missing is a commitment to the students who take what they have learned and actively participate in activities that are centered on the principles that have become the focus of education in the district today. I must admit that I was very surprised to learn that the district does not have dedicated funding for students who excel in such activities, nor even a policy for funding requests. I learned this when I recently reached out to Superintendent Gordon to request funding to help four third and fourth graders travel to Knoxville, Tennessee, to compete in the global finals of the International Destination Imagination Tournament. For those of you who are not aware, DI is an academic competition that is focused on innovation, creativity, teamwork, and the STEAM principles. Dr. Gordon authorized a $500 donation, yet appeared very hesitant to do so, noting that there is no policy in place. Given the district's commitment to STEAM, I would honestly have thought that this would have been a no-brainer. Here are four students who have worked incredibly hard for months, dedicating themselves to educational excellence, and were rewarded when they placed second in the entire state of Illinois. Can the district not afford $4,000? Is it true that all Glen Allen families can easily afford the trip? Well, my gut tells me the answer in both cases is no. In fact, one child has unfortunately already noted that he will not be able to join his teammates at the competition, while the remaining four actually took the initiative on their own to conduct a bake sale in order to help ease the burden. So I come before you this evening for two things. Number one, and I know that the board usually does not respond immediately to requests of this sort, but I will stress that time is very short as the competition is next week. To renew my request for a $4,000 donation to help the team compete on the highest level and represent the state and the district. And number two, that a policy be created that supports students who actively participate in academic activities that are intended to further their District 41 education. A policy that is transparent and that shows a true commitment to our students and our community. Thank you very much for your consideration.
For those of you who don't know me, my name is Christina Callum. I'm a PBL coach in the district. I was a parent for 8 years and have been a district employee for 11 years. In an article published by the Daily Herald on May 5th, a recently seated board member is quoted as saying, "It's been doom and gloom for months," referring to a previous school board decision. Even knowing that the media sometimes takes comments out of context, I'm troubled by the idea that a D41 school board member might be carrying such a negative idea about the mood in our schools. So allow me to share some of the positive things that I've seen this year as I've worked at each of the schools. Over and over again, I've seen the D41 learner characteristics at work, through compassion and nurturing among students at all ages. At Forest Glen, for example, two kindergarten girls figured out a way for a classmate who chooses not to speak to participate in the PBL panel presentation. At Lincoln, a group of level 2 students planned discrete hand signals so that one of their group members could ask for help if needed during the presentation. I've seen how collaborative work can raise all the members of a group to a higher level. At Hadley, I listened to an excellent presentation by a poised and confident group of girls and was subsequently told by the teacher that one of the members who was too shy to speak in class has blossomed before his eyes. At Forest Glen, I watched level 3 students eagerly share ideas as they developed activities to help children maintain their academic skills over the summer. Both 4th and 5th graders spoke to each other with respect, optimism, and encouragement because they knew that they could solve the problem at hand. Throughout the year, many experts have shared their knowledge with our students. These adults have passed on their passion to the children who have taken up the banner to save the bees, the ladybugs, the bats, and the birds. I've witnessed students sharing their ideas confidently with adults. And believe me when I say that it would be impossible for me to replicate the squeals of delight when an expert handed his business card to a third grader. The Forest Glen LMC was echoing with joy and optimism on that day. One of the most important things that I've seen this year is a look of pride on students' faces as they receive positive comments from panelists. This feeling of accomplishment is immediately shared with the teachers as the students return to class to describe the presentations and the feedback. I am lucky enough to hear the panelists' comments that inevitably include how impressed they are that our young students can do this kind of work. Doom and gloom is not a phrase I connect with our district. I think of phrases like meeting challenges, overcoming obstacles, supporting others, and rising above expectations. Our passionate educators and enthusiastic learners lead to optimism and success, and we invite you to join in our celebration of success.
I just want to clarify that I wasn't referring to what's happening in our schools or in our classrooms as we support our teachers. I praise our teachers many times. The comment was made in regard to the pay raise for the superintendent, and I said we've been continuing to move for months talking about us losing funding. That is specifically what the school said. I was not talking about the superintendent, but just the losing funding and how I thought it was responsible for high pay raise in that order. That has been paying on the board for months. So I would just like to clarify that. So I'm not going to propose that.
Randolph Taylor?
I'm Randolph Saylor. I'm here as an individual, but also because I've been a member of the library board for 10 years. There appears to be some disagreement in the board already about the rights of access for new trustees. It's my understanding that some board members believe that they may choose to block access for certain directors by choosing not to direct Dr. Gordon as an entire board, which the board needs to do as a board, to provide that information. Without that authorization, Dr. Gordon's hands are tied. He can't do it. So we would need the board to act. It's my understanding this is going to be discussed by the board later in the meeting. I want to make it clear, everyone here needs to understand that any contention that a board may deny specific trustees access to information that is available to other trustees is entirely incorrect. It has no basis in law. It has no basis in fact. If you allow this position to stand, you are putting an impermissible limitation on the fundamental rights of trustees merely because they disagree with the majority. This is not a question of voting on an issue. This is not a question of raising an issue. This is a question of access to information. It's clear we're going to have a divided board for the next 2 years. The majority has the absolute right to use their voting power to accept the proposals they want, to reject the proposals they want, and to take the actions they deem appropriate. They can do that as much as they want, and if the minority never gets what they want, that's fine. However, that does not mean that the rights of each trustee can be limited, or any trustee can be limited, whether it's by a majority of the board members or not. Those are inherent rights and, if I may add, duties of the trustees to properly inform themselves, and if they believe they need information, they are entitled to it. I'm lucky enough to have not been on a divided board. I don't know what it's like, but I will tell you, if we start focusing on stuff like this, if we start obstructionist tactics, if we start not dealing with real issues, it's really going to be a long 2 years. And unfortunately, if this ends up being blocked, if and when the minority trustees feel they have to go to either the press or the courts, I guarantee you they will ultimately prevail. The law is absolutely clear on this issue. I guess what I would ask is, fight all you want on issues. Have your issues. Vote the way you want to vote. But do not let this procedural issue, it's absolutely clear, turn into a big public mess. Because if it is not resolved, it's going to get very ugly and it's going to get very public. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bruce Curry.
To P. piggyback on that, about the school board meeting procedures, this is from the District 41 website. Individual board members may listen to verbatim recording when an action is germane to their responsibility. For example, in order to check the accuracy of the minutes or determine whether the recordings no longer require confidential treatment. That means that, and then later on in the board policy, every 6 months, the board has to look at closed session meetings and minutes and recordings and determine what they should do with those, whether there's non-private information on them, and whether they're, you know, what they should look at in those. The two board members who are currently being denied access to listening to the closed session recordings are being denied their rights. They have these rights. We, as a public, here expect them these rights to be enforced. It is their duty to, as stated in District 41 board policy, to listen to these recordings. I really think there's been a lot of discussion on the boards and everywhere else in the press, and I think the board needs to look hard and deep and really defend the rights that we fought very hard. Thank you.
Thank you. think as already when I took on the code of conduct proclamation for the newly sworn members of the draft, they look around and we can protect the community faces and even the press. But is this how you want to be portrayed to the rest of the community? Allow me to conclude by reading item 10 of the board code of conduct. I shall recognize the following, that the relationship with the superintendent and any individual board member is collegial and not hierarchical. I can certainly make the case that the opposite has been true over the past week and a half. Mrs. Clark and Mr. Buckles have done nothing except request to fulfill their duty what is duly listed as their rights, Mrs. Warren, Mr. Buckles, for the one board member.
Research that you look at says that it's very good for the children. Beginning of the second year, huge amount of time is not spent getting to know the kids, and I encourage you to educate parents about what it is on a website, send something home. I think if a lot of more parents know what it is, they would be likely to support it, and the very few people that wouldn't, they can opt their, I encourage you to let them opt their kids out, but whether or not every school is doing it the exact same way, I don't think that necessarily matters, but I think that this is something that is the right thing to do, and I encourage you to please support it. Thank you very much.
Welcome to all the members, including the administration. train kind of see the board really well. Thank you for being here, inviting us here tonight. First, by way of apology, Dan Burns, who kind of leads a lot of our community engagement programs, is at a meeting tonight in Lyle, so he couldn't come, so I'm kind of his cheap substitute, and I'll do the best that I can. But what I want to do, and not take up a whole lot of your time, because I know you've got a busy agenda tonight, plus a new board meeting, which you didn't anticipate, I just want to walk a little bit through our philosophy and some approaches, best practices to community engagement. The slide that's up is a little bit about our history. We've been around for a long time. The vast majority of our work is with school districts, public opinion polling, community engagement work, a lot of communications work. I've been sitting in a chair trying to remember what we did in 2001, and for the life of me, that's long enough ago I can't remember. But I don't remember referendum work. We may have done a survey that year, but that's the best that I can remember. I wish I had a better recollection of it, but what I do want to say about our agency is that what we do is try to help school districts achieve strategic goals, whether that's creating long-range plans, whether it's providing better resources for education, whether it's helping create an environment for facility improvements, and I put it motivated a lot of my behavior. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? That's one of the things from it. One nice thing about working for our agency is the helping kids in school districts, and you know, compared to companies, we feel pretty good about what we do. I want to skip over the awards. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about why community engagement is so important. And this is not necessarily a kind of a good news slide, particularly for new board members, but it has to do with a 30 and 40 year erosion in the United States and confidence in leadership beginning at the level. And it has, unfortunately, in many areas, permeated to the most local of office holders. You can see up there, 1 in 5 think leaders tell the truth. This is from the annual Edelman Survey on Leadership. The conclusions, leaders must change the approach to be more inclusive and seek more input. Influence moving away from leaders to peers. And when you ask people, there's a survey question every year on that survey, who do you believe in terms of communications? Who do you trust? And they ask about presidents and used car salesmen and lawyers and accountants, pastors, anything you can imagine. And the phrase that resonates with people is people like me. That's who I trust and that's who I believe. And so because of that, it's kind of getting people like me involved in the planning process that is one way of making it more successful. And that kind of underlies our entire approach to community engagement. It's getting a lot of those people like me involved in the planning process. This slide has to do with why you do community engagement. Somehow or another, I think I'm kind of preaching to the choir on this, and you wouldn't have me here to begin with. Obviously, in a school district, you need public support to virtually do anything that will help kids. People won't support what they don't understand. I think this is a critically important point to understand. A lot of times when school districts are trying to move forward and people are saying no, they say no for two different reasons. One, they just don't like what you're doing. But more often than not, they just kind of don't get it. They don't have access to the kind of information that you begin taking for granted that gets presented to you by staff every day. People are busy watching Wheel of Fortune or American Idol or dealing with 3 kids, trying to get to sporting events, and sometimes they just don't get what you're doing, and it's hard to communicate anymore. There's way too many channels sometimes for effective communications to occur because people are getting information from so many sources. We talked about the public being resistant to a top-down approach. A little bit later, I'll talk about what a good communications tool community engagement is. But what I want to talk about is discovery is more powerful than persuasion because, again, I think in terms of a best practice, this is a critically important point to understand. That is my high school teacher, Mary Soderman, that you're looking at. I will tell you what year I graduated, but it was a long time ago. I will tell you that is the entire junior and high school faculty. where I went to school. The entire bunch of them, all on one page. When I was in high school, Mr. Sullivan brought me up with geometry and kind of said, you know what, I'm a social studies teacher. I don't know why they have me in here teaching math. I'm kind of assuming, well, you can see how many teachers are out there. They just didn't have anybody that could teach math. And she said, well, I tell you what, we'll look at the book every day. We'll kind of work together. We'll try to figure this out, and we'll make do the best we can. So every day, that's exactly what she did. She'd come in, we'd open the book, we'd go to the chalkboard, we'd work. And by the end of the year, we were all pretty good at geometry, and so was she. She learned a lot. So I go off to college and doing relatively well. I'm kind of a statistics geek and a math geek. And it dawns on me she was the best teacher I ever had. She obviously knew math. She was kind of pulling our leg. But she knew if she gave us information, objective data, if she asked smart questions, if she created an environment where we worked together solving problems and answering questions, we collaboratively working together, and we sort of taught herself with her direction that discovering geometry was a lot more powerful than her standing up in front of a class trying to persuade us about geometry. In a lot of ways, that's our approach to community engagement. Get a lot of community members together, give them objective data, create a community conversation where people work together, dealing with challenges and opportunities they may be facing the school district. And they will create a long-range vision or a long-range plan that the community will support and get behind. And that's really, if you don't remember anything else I say tonight, that's the key part of community engagement, I think, is reaching consensus through this kind of process. Key outcomes is internal unity. You have a bulletproof plan for moving forward, and I have what and how in parentheses. In my view, a plan is only as good as the community number or the community consensus behind it. So how it is put together is just as important as what's in the plan. Needless to say, when you get 200-300 people at meetings, like we've had in Lyle, working on the development of the plan, you build up your base of committed volunteers. And then to use that's a Dan Byrne line that I used earlier, you get public permission for meaningful change. Sometimes that may require a referendum. A lot of times it does. Since 2001, we've done a lot of work in this area where the outcome of the community engagement program is not necessarily to go on the ballot, but it is to allocate resources a little differently. And I think that's an important point to make in this. I'm going to skip over. We usually try to get two types of input in doing an engagement program, public opinion research, and then the act of involving the stakeholders. A few years ago, and the reason it's important to get both kinds of measures, I'll give you an example. Naperville is doing a community engagement program. I think there's a recent one that we finished for them that won a bunch of awards. They were trying to get input on what to do with their high school, the one that's close to the center of town. And kind of the key options was tear down and build new or renovate. And the vast majority of input they got in their engagement program, we weren't working on this, by the way, was build new. It was more cost efficient in the long run, and that's what the community input was saying. We did a survey on that, and about at a 65-35%, the community was saying renovate. So the board had a tough decision. They were getting two different kinds of input. The board ended up renovating that high school. Now, if you've been to that high school, it is, for all practical purposes, new. They took it down to walls and dirt and renovated it. But it's important to hear from kind of everybody scientifically, the way a survey can do, and then also the people that will come to meetings, those 200 or 300 or 400 people that will come and work together. This is a slide just having to do with why doing research. I'm going to skip over that because I'm here to talk about engagement. And that, well, I love this question. It just shows you sometimes how you phrase things make a huge difference in a survey. These are two questions where the superintendent told us when he read the questionnaire. We had the same question on the survey twice. You can see the results are 22.8% difference in terms of the tone of the questions. First one's kind of threatening. The second one is more warm. and has groups like Continue In It rather than Sacrifice. A lot of times, communicating to the community involves using words and phrases that resonate with where they live. And in this community, no one wanted to be threatened. They wanted a different approach. What I do want to do is talk about best practices in community engagement. And I want to start this by saying that all of these come from us having made mistakes over the years. We have been doing engagement programs in one manner or another for about 20 years. And just about everything we know because we may have messed up at some point in time and tried to learn from that mistake. Best practices, a lot of people are involved. Lots of meaningful dialogue resulting in consensus and a lot of two-way communication. You have stuff you need to tell the community about where you are. The community, judging by what I heard tonight, has some things they'd like to tell you. And it's important to get that two-way dialogue started. Other best practices, internal support, a clear charge. I want to spend a minute talking about that. Any community engagement program that we do comes with a clear charge from the Board of Education, which in essence says, we are creating an engagement program, great big, huge committee, advisory committee, to give us advice in these areas. And that charge can include what you want recommendations about. It can also include statements about what you don't want recommendations about. And I'll give you an example of that. In Libertyville, Vernon Hills High School District, they wanted recommendations about a facility improvement plan, which in a lot of respects had to do with bringing the older high school up to the standards of the brand new one that they built. But one of the things the charge said was we completed work with the board 2 years ago having to do with how we're doing curriculum and instruction in the high school program that we operate. We don't want you changing that. You know, we had a lot of community buy-in on it. It's finished. What we want recommendations about is how can we better modify our facilities to accommodate where we're going with curriculum and instruction. And so that was kind of a given. But charge is very important. Ultimately, the program is yours, and you're going to be getting the recommendations, deciding what to do with them, so the board involvement is critical. Second thing is coordinating progress. I'll talk about the next few things in tandem. Community engagement has to be community-driven, and we spend a lot of time picking the citizens who are going to co-chair or chair the process, and the other citizens that are going to be part of the coordinating group, what we call a facilitating team. We don't like calling it a steering committee because that implies you kind of know where it's going, and they don't. But the facilitating team coordinates every piece of it. You want to get more than the usual suspects. When we started working in Lyle, they said we'd be a miracle if we could get 25 to 30 in the room. We consistently have close to 200 of their meetings. Wheaton, Warrenville, usually over 400. Huge attendance. Bigger districts, of course. Needs to be totally open and transparent. That was an issue in Iowa City where the question was, are the facilitating team meetings open to the public? Well, of course they are. People can come and listen, not necessarily participate. Comprehensive timeline and planning syllabus, kind of what do we want to know and what's our schedule for getting the work done, and then as I mentioned earlier, all data driven. Next thing has to do with just having good meetings. And one of the things that we've learned over the years is that you have one bad meeting, it kills the process. We did, and this was a long time ago, a meeting in a district in suburban Chicago. We had 300 people in the room. We had a presentation that wasn't rehearsed, so we didn't know what somebody was going to say. And they came in and not only gave a presentation that was way too long, but it was way too complicated and detailed and not well received. And we had like 50 people at the next meeting. You know, when people come to a community meeting, it needs to be an enjoyable experience for them. They need to be engaged, they need to have discussions with one another, and they need to feel like their input is appreciated. And then everything that they do needs to be documented. What the data or informational presentation was, what the activity was at the community session, what the results were by table when they do a work group, an executive summary, and then consensus points, and then those consensus points are used to put together the final recommendations. That's what they're doing in Wise and I. They have had a number of community meetings. At each community meeting, they learn something. It may have been about finance. It may have been about the condition of the facilities. It may have been about student achievement. It may have been about staffing. At each of those meetings, they collectively reach decisions about, you know, on a work activity. And then those recommendations, Danny, on those consensus points at each meeting, then become the building block for the recommendations that they will present to the Board of Education. That Riley and I are looking at the first draft of those recommendations and fix them. You know, the draft of people who have an opportunity to say, no, I don't like this, that, you know, it's not exactly right, that sort of thing. I'm only going to cover one of these models. You see probably four of them in your slides because it helps illustrate what I'm talking about. Again, the process starts with a board charge. Then we put together about a 15 to 20 person, what we call facilitating team, that is mostly community members. This is the level where we do most of our work. Dan likes to say these folks are about process. They put together the process. They customize it to a district. They're the folks that make sure it's not a one-size-fits-all program. Part of the process they put together is large community meetings that are held over time. These are the, Dan's from South, so I'd like to say these are the outcome meetings. At each meeting, topics, information is presented. In some districts, we have some building level meetings that may involve facilities, if facilities is part of the charge. It may not be. You know, they did not do this in Lyle. On the other hand, in St. Joseph, Missouri, we have meetings in every building where they were trying to assess the building condition of a lot of the buildings. At the end of this process, then, there's a process of developing the final recommendations that come to the board. That's one way of doing it. Another thing I want to point out in terms of what gets presented is we're not starting from scratch. You may have a one-way facility plan that you've already completed that you have to feed into the process and get input on. You may have a technology plan. I'm sure you know a lot about what's going on in the classroom or what you're trying to do with curriculum and instruction. All of that gets fed in. You know, the board has been meeting for a very long time and has been making decisions to improve the district. So that all becomes part of the process. You don't kind of start from scratch. Well, let me skip these other plans. These are kind of other ways of doing it, depending upon timing and kind of what has proceeded, where we're going, that I had sent from our discussions. But this is more, you know, what they've done in week one, Bill, and kind of what has got people's attention. What I'd like to do is, I've got a video clip from Expert New York. And these are video clips that we did not produce. A local cable TV channel produced it for the district. And it kind of gives a little bit of brings to life kind of what these meetings go, how they go. And the first clip was just superintendent welcoming everybody. This is what they call their program. See a lot of people in the room. We want to hear from you. We got a lot of work to do. These are actual work sessions. And people, when they come to the meetings, they know they're going to work. Next is just a little clip of a finance presentation that was part of the data information that people were considering. Latino population, so there's an issue of achievement gaps, and this is the assistant superintendent for curriculum and instruction, looks like you're about 18 years old.
And I think that's the most important thing that is the right thing for my own students, and both of which I'm with us, and I'm going to have a lot of students for those schools.
So presentations about the achievement gap, finance, all this reporting out when people at the end of the work sessions, people kind of reported what they've done. Kind of all summarized and just kind of knowing what works and knowing what doesn't work and avoiding pitfalls and having a good sense of best practices. When we started doing this, actually probably back in about 2001 is when this happened, we had a client kind of look at us after a meeting and said, you guys are kind of making this up as you go, aren't you? And he wasn't too far from being accurate about that. There wasn't a lot of best practices to look at. And I mentioned earlier, a lot of what we know is just doing it. We've learned by doing. But after doing this for nearly 20 years, we got a pretty good handle on it. We know the pitfalls to avoid. We still might make a mistake now and then. But hopefully with the active involvement of that facilitating team and really high-quality small group decision-making that occurs at that level, the program will go on without a hitch, and we're certainly having a lot of success recently in doing that. You know, community engagement is a little bit like herding cats. It's a messy process. You know, anytime you involve hundreds of people in the community, you got to understand it's kind of messy. But it will go where it needs to go, and it will lead to a productive conclusion if you can tolerate a little mess now and then. And then I mentioned that these are just, I won't read these. These are a couple of testimonials from Iowa City. Iowa City had done some community engagement work several years before we did this project with the architectural firm that they hired, and it had been an utter and absolute disaster. And there's some reference to that in the second of these quotations, where he said, instead of feeling bruised by the general antipathy that had dominated earlier panel-style meetings, with emotional speeches from the mic, I left the hall with a deeper and better understanding of people from across town. Felt like we were all actually working with each other and that I could respect their values in a new and simpler light. That kind of is a good summary for kind of how this program works. I mentioned earlier that it's got to be right for your district. I think the one thing that was kind of a last dose lesson that we learned was not to take a model off the shelf and say, this is how you have to do it, but make sure that it's customized for your district in terms of where you are, what kinds of challenges and opportunities that you may be facing down the road, and making sure that those things are not only addressed in the charge that you put together and will help with that, but also in the process. Because it needs to be right for your district, or what we do in Reed-Warrenville, or what we do in Aprilville, or what we're doing in Lyle, or what we're starting in Elmhurst right now, may need some modifications. And making it right for your district is what the community members on the facilitating team does. I failed to mention that there will be two Board of Education liaisons on that facilitating team to facilitate communication back to the Board of Education. And then the superintendent and a staff member kind of responsible for making things happen will be on that. So there's a lot of internal communication to make sure the program goes well. And I hope I didn't take up too much time. Please do that. I'm hesitant to say I'll answer questions because Dan always is smarter than I am, but I'll do my best. That's kind of our first run at it.
Yep.
Sometimes we have to go back, and that language is in the proposal, and kind of tweak it and make modifications. One of the things that we don't know going into our proposal sometimes is what kind of resources are available at the district versus what we need to bring in terms of production of communication materials and that sort of thing. Ironically, you know, the program that had our largest fee was for Harper College a few years ago, and they had a staff of communications and marketing that was probably the biggest of our agency. But the president of the college said, we're busy, we're overworked, you guys are doing everything. On the other hand, you have a communications professional on staff here, and that will help a lot in terms of keeping the process at a more affordable level, I think.
A call bank, the district, and their responsibility was
just going to be self-serving, that we have to make a bad point on the ballot, so for us to fail.
Understanding of differences of opinion.
great. By the way, I only went to the two of those meetings. I thought it was Dan organized that program. I think it was probably the best one we've run in a long time. The Naperville program won a bunch of awards away from Naperville. But I left a week long ago program. other thing about the facility piece, it's a way that you want to get that. Yeah. the St. Charles process got ahead of steam up for lower class sizes in the early elementary ages down to about 15. Well, we were pretty much in Dr. Gordon's face. You know, when you put a price tag on that, it is staggering. And what Dr. Achilles said, if you make that commitment to K-1 through 3, of course, they have a lot of impact. Continue it on to grade 12. Well, what we did, you know, our facilitating team wanted to look at other things that drive student achievement, better student performance. And we had one of the assistant superintendents make that presentation on staff development, which in essence kind of says if you really want to bang for the dollar, make a profit for the dollar, you need to look at enhanced professional development. And with the community members who have talked about, they literally one night sort of had a discussion. We have $20. You know, how much do we want to spend on reducing class size? How much do we want to spend on professional development, including national certification to define a little back? St. Charles set a goal for that, by the way, that was a program. And so the discussion with all the data, the community made the decision. So that's how, it's a long story, but that's how you're going to work. So it's important for the board members, but to literally be part of the game.
Thank you. this piece of reality. So with that, so who's going to kick it off? Sure.
I'll tell you, Michelle, I want to talk. But anyway, we are here though, because here's some information about some of our schools.
Thank you.
that, we take good for that.
course, I think that was the clarity that we were trying to get for Todd on closed session.
Without your request being raised, Well, we're not asking us to vote. We're just saying Paul's wrong.
Let me clarify, because
we're not saying Paul's wrong.
Let me clarify this, because we're parsing words. The purpose in sitting down with Stephanie for me was to recognize that there had not been a conversation between her and Stephanie and any of us really on this. They came as a request on April 22nd in an email, along with other, the initial one, along with other initiatives that they have interest in discussing, and then another email requesting specifically access to closed session tapes. One of the things that was clarified with Stephanie and I got was that it wasn't necessarily all the closed session, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there were things that we felt were more important than others in order to get up to speed. So that was one piece. The other thing that that we have not been able to do was to have this conversation in our regular business meeting, which is what this is. These meetings are public, but they're not public meetings. It's for us to do work together as a board, and we have not had an opportunity to do that. So I did feel like it was important to do it, because I do recognize that we have a sense of urgency and we want to see where this can move. So one of the things that we talked about that I think is important that hadn't come up is something that I mentioned in the way that I wanted to set this up, which was because in my recent memory, and I did follow up with the project just to find out what how that process worked, and it was with three board members that were elected. I forget how many elections it was, about three or four, three maybe. And that had been for that board, one of the first times where board members come into us collectively with the members who want to listen to it, and so it was granted. In addition, my understanding is that their board council either was nearby to answer questions or available or whatever that was, so that there could be some understanding that they were listening to it and that they were getting the right tapes. So it was important for me to follow up on that as well. But the other thing is this issue of unintended consequences. I'm not sure this with Stephanie, I just want to be forthright about it. When a board meets in executive session, the implicit expectation is that those conversations are held with that board about that business. It could be a personnel decision, it could be about a teacher, it could be about a student discipline issue, it could be about anything, and that when I go into those conversations, the expectation is that those members seated and those conversations with whatever staff member might be there to give advice and then or counsel is an emergency too. I mean, it's just that group together, and there's an expectation of that that that's the group, the members, the people that will have access to that information because they themselves are in that very private conversation. So right or wrong, I'm just saying that that's the way I've always looked at through my board training and just moving into the board, the way that I look at it. I know that you disagree with that. I know that you both disagree, and I respect that. Yeah, I know. I wanted to get that out there so that at least there's some definition in that board and that is for me. And so based on that, when the request came through Paul, my immediate response as an individual board member was, I don't have history in this. There's not a single new board member coming on board, at least in my history, that asked for this. And so the process that we govern by is conversation at the board meeting, and then also as an opportunity to look at policy, develop policy around that. And I think that that's a tool that's important to use. And so that's some of where I came, and I think I shared all that with Stephanie when we were in our meeting together, and that it isn't to be preaching, but it is to say that in my experience I come to this thoughtfully because of the conversations in those meetings are very they're crucial conversations. They're important. They're about staff. They're about people who understand that the people involved in that conversation are the ones that will have access to that. At least that's the expectation that one might assume. We're talking about some assumptions, so we're going to go together on the table.
Did the voters elect us to have access to information? And I guess when you talk about an open meeting, accomplish. This is, you know, begs the question to me, you know, here's the timeline. We asked Dr. Gordon for information. We didn't direct him. We just said we'd like to come in, start to listen to those tapes, accessing information, which is something you, Mr. Escalante, have done several times, I'm sure, in your career. Board members asked Dr. Gordon for information. You didn't have to go to the whole board for that. What we were met with was a letter from the attorney that said, here's, you know, and again, it wasn't Dr. Gordon, but he said, here's the opinion, and it's the opinion of the district's attorney. So I then start to question, when did the board direct Dr. Gordon to get the opinion of the attorney? Because that did not happen in an open public meeting. So when did that occur? Did Dr. Gordon just do that on his own? Was he acting on his own volition? Then now we're starting to get into things, and I'm not saying that he did. Now we're starting to get into things that are saying, well, then he wasn't directed. So somebody directed him, and someone directed him without a public meeting. So I have concerns about that. Because that's never occurred. So I'd like to know at this point, since we're in an open public meeting, who directed Dr. Gordon to go ahead and ask Mr. Faulkner for that opinion?
That's it.
Yeah. When your email came and it was dated April 27th, it was as board members elect, and so the question came, the request came, we want to, you know, 9:30 Tuesday morning after we're sworn in, we want to be able to get access to these tapes. And as I said to you, I know for myself, there was a question around, how do we do this? You know, this is not, you know, certainly hope.
That wasn't the email that came from the attorney. We knew that letter from the attorney. Any emails we sent before that, which just said, you know, once we're sworn in, we'd like to come in and schedule some time.
Yep.
We said the 9:30 on Tuesday morning after you were presented with the letter. I read the statement.
Last Monday.
So we never, Tuesday at 9:30.
Nope.
We were just, hey, when can we come in? That was never.
Mm-hmm. And at some point, I guess, I'd like a question and answer here. I don't care about that. When did someone, or was it an individual board member who can't direct the superintendent? So you would have to have a group of board members direct the superintendent to get an opinion from the attorney. When did that occur? When was that meeting?
When the email came in, that request, Paul reached out to each of us individually, as is appropriate, to say, here's the request. I know that we asked you, just because of where this came
from. One-on-one conversations.
Yes.
Okay, so it was coming back then. The doctor, I just want to make sure I've got this clear.
Right.
You know,
because
the smartest guy. But, so he called you and he said, what's your opinion on this? And then he called Mr. Escalante and he said, so Erica believes that we should do this. And
no, because
you know,
that would be a violation of anything that
he doesn't do.
Right. And so
how do you as a group? We're talking about a public open meeting to make a decision. How does that occur? And how does Mr. Elger know what Mrs. Nelson is thinking at that time?
But
you're saying that we're doing this in an open public meeting. I'm looking for an answer.
Your assumption is that anytime anybody makes a request, you have to go to the attorney.
I don't know the board policy about directing him on an attorney question.
I think it has to do with
I don't know the answer to that. But what I am wondering is someone directed Dr. Gordon to go do this. And was that, so you built consensus on one-on-one phone conversations between every board member, is that what occurred, and then Dr. Gordon was then directed to go get this opinion from the attorney? Is that what occurred?
We got an email, which he forwarded, which he is bound to do, to let us know. I initiated a call to say, it's not my experience that brand new board members come in and listen to closed session audio of a board they went out to meet on. That was my experience. I said that already twice. I said it for a third time. That's my experience. And I asked Paul what would be helpful on this? That's her question. Because when I have a question, and I believe that we'll find this too, and maybe we can have even if not just for meetings, we can think of
how this situation. We can never think that we
can direct
it to.
I did not. And that to me happened.
You'd like them all counsel set. You were directing him.
I asked the question. Because this was, it's not directing him, I asked the question. Because this is not an experience that I had had. And so I wanted to make sure, from what I saw as an atypical experience, that we did the right thing. And what's getting lost here a little bit?
Well, the right thing is not, the right thing is allowing access to information that were elected by the voters of this community to give us that access. That's the right thing. The wrong thing is blocking us from that or even having this conversation.
We still don't have
access to the information based on an opinion from the attorney.
Okay. But this is this part, and I think it's getting lost, and I'll shut up after this. But you're not making a request for this course. We're just discussing it for transparency purposes, and so that you can actually hear it, and then the other board members can hear it, and then you can hear it. Because you have not made a request, which is fine. It's your prerogative, and I'm not asking you to make a request.
We did make a request to listen to the open session.
But not to the board. Your request still stands today to the superintendent, whether you're a new member or an patient, but that you listen to the closed session minutes going back, I'm asking about 3 minutes. As part of the new board orientation package, we want access to the 18 months, and that's a request that you're not making to the board, but that you're making to the superintendent to get proper warranty. Is that a fair?
We're just asking the superintendent to provide the information to us, which every one of these board members has done, that whether it was to find out how much a brick and mortar section of the building cost from Mr. Cicerella that would have gone through Dr. Gordon. I mean, if this is the game we're going to play, then every piece of information has to then go through the entire board before it goes to Dr. Gordon. So if we want a piece of information from Mr. Cicerella, I mean, last week Mr. Kenwood asked Mr. Cicerella what the fund balances were, how much money we had in savings, and he directed that question. He should have then actually asked the board, can I get this information from Mr. Cicerella?
The thought is that I went to the training that you're about to go to. And in that training, they gave us school board governance process. In there, it said what you should expect as a school board. This is what we should expect from each other. One of them is the opportunity to speak candidly during a legally called closed session without concern for being repeated or confidentiality being breached after the meeting. I'm concerned, I'm going to finish here if you'll let me talk. I'm concerned that I will be breaching confidentiality with the three members who are no longer a member of the board. There are three other members that were in those meetings that aren't on this board today. And when we're in that, we have a fiduciary responsibility with each other, and hope it will be extended to all of us. So when we're in a closed session, what's discussed in closed session stays in closed session. I was shocked because I didn't get access to these. I didn't even think to ask for access.
That's your fault.
And it is. No, it's not my fault. It's my prerogative. It's not a fault. It's my prerogative that I didn't ask for. And that's what informed me on this, is I feel like I'm breaking my oath to the last board because now I'm making it available to the people who weren't in the closed session. And there are things that we talk about. There's things that talk about. There's 15 different items on the sheet.
So what are we going to talk about?
We're
going to review those, are we?
By not allowing us to listen to the closed session audio, are you... But whether you may or may not, I mean, the point of all this communication, you don't have to have permission, you know. We're elected officials, we're not children, we're asking our parents to give us approval, but are you going to prevent us from doing our jobs as elected officials to give every 6 months we have a federal award, you know, the full session minutes, and the reason and policies, then we send the annual meetings for these full session minutes. The board will also review the audio recordings of closed meetings in order to determine whether, number one, there continues to be need for confidentiality, or number two, the recordings no longer require confidential treatment and are available for public inspection. There is absolutely no way for us to know what's on those recordings if we just look at the closed session minutes, because I've looked at a couple of closed session minutes, and there's been meetings that are an hour long, and the minutes are literally like 6 lines, 1 paragraph long. So I don't know how on earth I can glean what occurred in that discussion if those are the minutes that I have to go off of, and as an elected official, one of my jobs is to send the annually review those minutes and those audio recordings and determine what action to take on those. I can't do my job if I don't have access to those. And the other part of it is, we are elected to the board, we're representing the community, they are going to hold us to any decisions that are made from here on out and any decisions that have already been made. They don't care that we were here when the decision was made. That doesn't matter. At this point, we're on the board, and any decisions moving forward, we have to represent, we have to explain the reasoning behind it, because they just see us as board members supporting whatever decisions this board moves forward with. How can we do that if we don't have any idea what the basis for some of the decisions were? How can we support what the board is moving forward with if we don't know? You know, we've sat in meetings for 2 years, so we know what was discussed openly with the public, but that's just a piece that's missing. And, you know, I guess my question would be, I understand some of your concerns that I get those concerns, but we are now elected officials. We've taken an oath of office. You know, do you not trust us with the oath that we took as an advocate? Or what do you not want us to hear? Because otherwise it makes absolutely no sense to me the reason for why we shouldn't be able to live in my body.
What I don't understand is we're not allowing you. That's where you go back to. You're not requesting us.
Well, I mean, at this point, I mean, it is the board that's not allowing us, because we're being told that it's in the board's hands. We are saying we don't feel that we should have to ask for approval, because I feel, I mean, if I have to ask you for approval to get access, I will, but that I'm going to take issue with that going forward, because I think we're setting a bad precedent, and I think that needs further evaluation. But I don't feel I should have to ask you for approval, but the board is who is holding this up. It is in the board's hands. It is not in Dr. Gordon's hands. It's not in Mr. Faulkner's hands. He is giving you an opinion, and you can decide what to do with this. And I, you know, when I sat down with Erica and Paul, I said, look, I understand that there was some concern. That a better way to approach this maybe would have been to talk to Kurt and I individually and just say, you know, these are some of our concerns. Get comfortable with those. And we don't want to move on. Yep, we understand, okay. And that's what I talked to Erica about and said, I would like to just move on with this, be done with this. We really have to come to another board meeting and talk about it. We're going to end up in the papers again discussing it. It's just, to me, it just doesn't seem to make sense for something that
I think what's important, and I'm not uncomfortable with when we get doing family with things in the papers for a lot of weeks now, so that's not uncommon. But I think what was missing is that I had a chance to speak one-to-one with you. And then for the board to be able to have this kind of conversation, this is where we do it at the table. Comfortable, uncomfortable, long or short, whatever it might be. And I think that's important.
But the conversation we're having here today is a lot different from the one you and I had. I think we haven't really been asked for understanding. We've just kind of been told
why we don't think that the reason that you want, and the baseline is getting up to speed and understanding that there's a lot of risk to speak. We have all kinds of other information, and I think that's why when the email came to Paul, it was a surprise, because it's not something that from Rhode Island, which was, they had not been a request by other board members, so I hope you understand that the request itself is out of the ordinary, and so the response is the board member, for all the reasons that we've talked about, is to take a step back to say, let's make sure we do this, let's put out the view that we're doing this the right way. So I would like to make a suggestion, right? And that would be, as you say, we don't have board policy. I did a little bit of digging, and really there's only one other district really in the area that has something, and it's mostly like ours anyway in terms of the biannual review of the minutes. Does it make sense to expedite this like we did with some of the other policies to between now and our next meeting to have you come to town and take a look at what's the best way to develop a policy so that when something like this comes up, the board is comfortable and can think about the process and still provide what's needed or necessary, but also be addressing the concerns that board members have. Again, our voices, former voices that are no longer here, are in on those conversations. I trust that you have taken your oath and think that. Not have any reason not to.
We're from school, and we're going to do that because if you think about it, four policy is too common. One is easy, or whatever is easy, or the number of dollars in the thing. It gives exactly what like people are asking a question about new board organization. It's going to specifically go to the file point of what to do. And if it doesn't include the beginning,
That is illogical.
We definitely need a policy to govern the board, and that's
So in 6 months, around August, when we have to do the semi-annual review and what that...
What I want to suggest,
No, actually, I thought Mr. Shue, you got off a very good point.
Information. And that's just our board. It's not every board. Every boards are different. And I'm looking at the non-verbals coming from that room. I get that.
Does that mean we can't accept any other information we ask for?
No, absolutely not. And I think I do not want this, I don't want this stranded down into every single time, to your point, Greg, that we want a piece of information. We just did a board orientation to test that if you have a question, well, how that single point of contact is going to work, so we can make sure that that's done in an expedient way. What I'd like to suggest is that we take the policy that we have in place and have you look at that and say, how do we amend this? How do we look at this? So that we're answering the question, and that is, what does it mean to gain access to executive session? An executive session is very different than printing out board policy or printing out contracts or printing out that type of thing. But it has deeper impact.
I can't agree to a policy. And I can't even agree to view a policy because you're talking about, again, I'm going to reiterate this, there is information that we absolutely have a right to. There's no deviation for me on this. We absolutely have a right to this information as board members. And the problem with creating a policy is we're either going to create it and say you have access to this information, or you're going to create a policy now that Mr. Saylor, to his point, that you could create a policy and that we could be outvoted on now because you're going to have to vote on that policy that says that we're going to restrict the information. Now you're getting into a slippery slope that Mr. Saylor talked about, which was very important. What he was saying was if you have certain things that you, board policy, budgets, those kinds of things, if we go and let's just say we lose 5-2 for the next 2 years. That's part of what happens here, that we took a vote on things that we should vote on. Let me finish. But if you're talking about the access to information, that is not something that you have a right to vote on. You don't have a right to block us from that information, nor do you have a right to vote on that. And that is what's wrong here, and I will not agree to move this thing forward to the policy committee, because when you go to policy, then it becomes a vote, and that becomes a huge issue, and you're not going to paint me into that corner. We're not going to do that.
I have no intention, as the person who's charged with leading the board, to turn this into, you know, any kind of subset of votes. Is that my intention? I would say that in my welcoming comments.
But when you move it to a policy, it's going to vote. But are you going to vote on it when you move it to a policy?
May I finish? It's not my intention. It's not the leadership that I want to provide. Tonight was an opportunity because we had not had this since Stephanie and I talked about it. I understood that this was not where you wanted this to go. Mr. Kenyon said that we had spoken with you prior to the public comment we made before our board reorganization meeting. And in fact, we talked about putting it on board agenda tonight. And so I, in some ways, was following what I presumed from this comment was an interest of yours. I would like to go back to our meeting, Stephanie, and we ended it. And my notes were blew that was a full amount, but we ended it by talking about your recognition and mine that there are some things in closed session that are not needed necessarily for you and Christopher, and other things that are very important to you, like any of the facilities work, some of the work around curriculum, instructional, Team 21, that type of information. And so I do think, and it is not my intention, again, to play a game or to create a roadblock. My intention is to figure out, when we're doing this at the table, how we can move forward in a way that's going to set a precedent moving forward that is reasonable, that recognizes the responsibility of closed session, that recognizes that there's transition and there are other people involved in this as well. That's my intention. And I would ask for consensus from the board if we could at least allow Stephanie as a new policy committee member, who clearly has a vested interest in this, and being served on policy committee for the last 2 years, to work this out, and at least bring something to the board. We've had, in the past, lots of back and forth between Dean and other board members who served, the other board members we've served with. I had an experience with other board members where we did not see eye to eye on policy, but we worked hard to, bring back to the board something that would be a good policy for governance. I mean, that's the thing that I think is so important.
I'm happy to work on a policy, but not for this. I don't think that's appropriate at all. I think we have the policies in place. That's what we should be following. If we want to create a new policy, that's fine. We can do that after we have. But I'm not going to sit down right now and work on a policy that we're going to all vote upon and agree upon, which is give me or not give me access to information that, according to all the policy I'm looking at now, I should have access to. I'm not.
Can you appreciate, though, the fact that myself, some of the other board members, do view executive session, closed session, differently than your point of view?
I can appreciate that, but it doesn't change my opinion on how I cannot do my job as an elected official if I'm not given access to those audio recordings. And if the minutes do not capture what was discussed in those meetings, as an elected official, I'm going to be held accountable for the decisions the board made, whether I was involved in them or not. And if I don't understand the reasoning that went into those decisions, I don't understand how I can represent the district and the school board. And so you're prohibiting me from doing my job as an elected official by saying I can't access that information. At this point, I don't know what you need to do. You can either say we can have access to it tomorrow. We have to make a motion to put it to a vote. Like I said, I personally don't feel this should be voted on, but if that's what we have to do to get it on record, I will do it. But I'm going to take issue with it moving forward. But I think we need to figure this out now. I don't want to delay this.
At the end of our meeting together, with Paul was coming in, we talked about certain information that I just mentioned this a minute ago that we felt was really important. And I do believe that there's some executive session that is really truly only for the parties that were in there. And we talked about an example, and it was some of the board self-evaluation. It's specific to that board. It's us working through our guidelines, norms, behaviors, goals, all those things. And for the board members, I've done a board evaluation every other year I've been on the board, so that would be at least four. If not, I think we did a fifth. I would take exception to opening that up to voices, from former board members, when in that moment, they're, again, being honest and forthright.
We agreed that was not honest.
I just want to bring that out because we're not talking about that.
I'm just saying, I promise you, I assure you, we have no interest in listening to that. I said that is the one thing I can promise you, and you will not listen to, but I couldn't promise what other meetings we would have listened to. I had assured you of that, and I had asked you to share that with the other board members.
I had individual calls with these other board members, and or I think a text was the best we could do. I wanted to be able to say that out loud. I wanted to have that put on the record, because I think that that's important, and I think what it says is that we're going to have a different opinion on what's important and what's not.
We don't disagree about that. We're with you that was specific to that board, and Dr. Gordon talked to us about that. He said, that would be one that, maybe it doesn't really serve a purpose, because it's not something that is your main responsibility. I mean, we don't need to talk to people about what you guys discussed internally as a board, however that went. That wouldn't be anything that's public policy, but, you know, it's nothing that would relate to that, so.
One of the pieces of the board policy, we're not going to say it's verbatim, but there's a piece that says, and this is, shows up in another elementary district locally as well, and that is the intention of going into listen to a closed executive session is not to question or recant or restate the recollections of that meeting. It is simply to gain that information.
That's your
point.
Yes, we've read it.
Right.
Yep.
I know you have, but I just want to make sure that I think that that's important now, because much of the business involving closed session is around action that's taken, work that's been done, we've moved on. That district has moved on in terms of decision making. And I understand that, you know, is some of what you want to understand.
Well, history, you could move on, but the understanding of history, you could have moved on, you'd like to understand that. Mm-hmm. So, and you started off the conversation by saying that you've never had this request. You also haven't had two board members that are seated that spent 2.5 years sitting in the audience doing the homework. So we're continuing, and look, it's not like I'm dying to leave my office during the day to do this, but I took an oath of office, and I sat here away from my family for 2.5 years to make sure that I knew exactly what I could find out in public meetings. I also have that same obligation. The last piece of that puzzle is the closed session material, and we're willing to take time out of our lives to do that. And again, Stephanie, we do not have to ask the board for this permission. I do not agree that it should go to policy, because then it's going to be something that's voted on. And it's just, you know, people said I'm playing a game. I'm not playing a game here. I'm saying we should have access to this information. And so, we've proven, and the voters believe that we did our homework. And that's why they elected us as the top two vote getters. They had faith in us to go ahead. And part of what they wanted was to change the culture here. And that was the transparency piece. And I'm not sure what is being hidden here, but something is really preventing you guys from holding back.
I want to be clear about that. There's nothing being hidden, Kirk. I think the most important thing is...
I'm granted access to it.
Well, and I feel like, and Scott asked the question, that was not being understood from, and I'll own it, my point of view, and I talked to Stephanie about this, that I feel the burden as a board member of that executive session in a way that's tangible. And I use that term intentionally because the conversation, the information that is in there, again, much of it probably around personnel, teachers, you know, student discipline, parents, things like that, is really done in the context of that board in that moment of time. It is very rare. I can count on one hand, I think three fingers, why the request of a board president was prior to John Kenwood of going in and listening to a closed session tape. It is not something that is, as I said, typical request, which is why we wanted to have this conversation. And I simply want you to understand the gravity that I feel as a board member of this as well. There's one acknowledgement of that.
Well, in the context of the meeting could be context of any meeting. And then Stephanie, I shouldn't have spent the last 2.5 years here because we wouldn't be part of the context of the meeting. The other thing that's interesting to me is as we talk about, you know, Mr. Elser talks about he's concerned about other board members. It's been in the media, on the agenda. I don't see another board member here who's concerned about that. And we were told when we had concerns and sat in the audience that we were told often that we didn't represent the entire community. And now we're bringing up people that aren't even here that seem to not be concerned by it. So,
well, you know, you could presume that they will recognize the gravity of it and in a way that, I mean, I'm not going to presume why they're doing that, but could.
The board member said that he was concerned about that. That would be speaking for other board members if they were concerned about it.
Maybe I can straighten that out. I'm not looking for their permission to do this. I'm saying that when I go into those meetings, I take that very seriously, as I'm sure you will. That what goes on in that meeting is bound to stay in that meeting. And then we can come out and we can vote on things in open session. And during that, one of the reasons it found like that is there is open and candid conversation a lot of times about people.
But it could
have incidents.
But if it's recorded, it could be, I mean, that information can be accessed at some point.
A judge can access it.
A judge can access it.
You're a public official, you're in a meeting, even though. I actually had someone say to the board, no, if it's closed session, the conversation might not be as frank and fluid if they know that anybody can still listen to those recordings at a later date. And my answer to that is, if you're an elected official, you shouldn't be saying anything in closed session that you wouldn't say to someone's face, that you wouldn't want someone to hear. I think you can still have honest conversation. But I understand your concern, but it does not hold weight as an elected official. You've taken an oath. You should have access to that information. You know those are recorded conversations, and they can be accessed. It's not as if they're recorded and they're just stowed away until they're destroyed and nobody will ever listen. And you know there's always a chance that someone could listen to those recordings.
There is. They won't feel like by judge.
But there is.
Absolutely.
What
is the objection that people are feeling at this point that we can get things to do? I know you could have something said. I feel like I've been able to identify what I've heard. And just again, from the start of the request, that we need to have some way to move forward.
I don't know what the question is.
The question is, does the board want to provide with, and I'll add my own caveat to this since Stephanie and I talked about this, based on a list of specific closed session audio, to provide that to Stephanie and for her to listen to here at the Central Services office, and for purposes of getting up to speed for the organization. But again, a specific request based on reading through the closed session written minutes so that you would know what you're working for. The consensus or what's the direction. I'm willing to meet with Stephanie and meet with Kurt individually, and then do outreach to the board this week again, if we feel like we need to do that.
We should have open, we're having open discussion. We shouldn't be reaching out to the board. We've been said that we're transparent and open, so we should be managing this in the open, not reaching out to people on one-on-one conversation.
You had mentioned, Chris, that you and I hadn't had a chance to sit down. If there's anything else you need to say, okay.
So,
the question is, can we come to the CSO tomorrow to listen to closed session audio, or do we have to make a motion to put it to a vote now? Like I said, I'm not condoning that it should be put to a vote, but if that's what I think we need to do something tonight with that, if we do take it to a vote, I am going to take issue with how we proceed with this, because I feel like we're setting the gas press.
Specializes in this, and they absolutely have said there's no basis for them. You asked me a question, so that's who we talked to. We certainly talked to attorneys within the town, that have looked at it. So the point of the matter is again, what this really looks at is we went to them to make sure that, just to make sure, hey, maybe we've missed something. Maybe we've missed the state statute. Maybe we didn't. So the burden becomes to you guys to prove to us that you're not going to allow us to access it, which was a letter from Mr. Faulkner. And again, that letter was loosely, state statutes that were loosely tied together, some of which didn't even pertain to elected officials. They pertained to people us last week on Monday and didn't pertain to us on Tuesday. So, you know, again, it's an access of information. I mean, I'm getting to the point of I'm waiting for the East German figure skater or speed skater to come out here. I mean, this is where we've become.
Specializes in this type of law, that is a different meaning than an attorney. I have a lot of friends that are attorneys. I could ask them a question. You know, could give me a good answer. Yeah, that would make sense. But they're real estate attorneys. So we could have to. So giving defining this for me helps me. I'm not a attorney. I'm not a magician. I'm just trying to get a clear understanding. So that helps. And for me, you know, I understand your request. I understand where you're coming from. I struggle with it. This is why I struggle with the police policy. I mean, when I'm in there, I'm taking the policy, and I appreciate that. I don't think you get a 5-2 vote the way you think, and maybe that's not what you think. You just don't want to waste the time to do it. Whatever case it may be. But for me, we live by policy. We have to. We can't break policy or set new precedents for policy. Without policy is wrong, like it was on technology, we ran through that thing quick to fix it. You know, you need to do that in changing things. And to me, I'm going to go back to the policy, like I said, and try to understand it more in the construction of it. So there is a conflict. And does that mean that you can listen to it only at that time? Well, if I read all the language, like it's getting used to all that finish, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's what it is. But for me, I'm going to do the research in the ability to understand it. Because what I don't want to do is make a mistake on emotion. That I then set the precedent for future boards and defending positions where they may make decisions based on my bad precedent. So I am going to do that for the boards, and I appreciate your point of view. So, we need to do
that. Well, what I made on this, and I'm going to ask again for consensus again, is that the policy that you read is the one that's listed under what new board members receive in terms of information. And their request, or not a request, the expectation is that closed session audio is a part of that. You don't have that listed. It's important. That's why I brought it up, to recognize your sense of urgency. I would really like us to have some consensus to actually have that policy conversation, to look at policy 2-1, whatever the number is, in addition to our closed session case policy, because we need to clarify. And this is at this point, I feel like I can agree to disagree.
Thank you.
I'll speak for myself. There's agreement that getting up to speed is done in a lot of different ways. People before you have not sought closed session audio. We have history, and you have assured me in our meeting when you said it tonight that this is not about looking for the Meeting Act violations. It's not looking for anything but getting up to speed on information. I accept that face value. It was a great one. I'm just saying it out loud because we talked about it. So I do appreciate that. But boards govern through policy, and it's absolutely crucial to me that we do this with that.
Can I say something? I don't know how much we pay Mr. Faulkner to spend time to come up with that letter, and none of these policies that you're mentioning were in this letter. So if those policies had any weight, they actually would be preventing us from having to decide you. I would assume, him being an expert, that we probably paid
$2,000
Why did we ask Mr. Faulkner for this guidance? If he could have just looked in the policy and come up with that. that on phone. He didn't quote that policy at that point. I don't think there's any...
To me, it's bigger than that money of the growth group. That's horrible, but, you know, how does executive session fall into the Illinois School Code? And then we have our policy.
I mean, it's just ridiculous at this point. Now we're making it up.
No, we're not making it up.
It is.
I came in here with the desire to be able to put on the table the concerns that I had to try and gauge the concerns that other people have. And our policy is where we get to. And that's the government's role, and that's what we do. We don't manage, we don't administrate the government, and we look at our board
policy. That policy does not say, it says, this is the information they have access to. It does not say they cannot have any other information. If it said that, I could see you, well, we have to, this is what the policy says. All it says is...
No,
that's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Just to see if we can move things along a little bit here. I did hear three people say they're really not interested in new policy, if I were taking Joe's and your perspective on that, not to create new policy.
If we want to look at our policy going forward, I'm okay with that. But I don't think we should be reviewing policy and creating new policy right now. But this is, I just feel there's a bias going into it. We want to do that going forward. I mean, policy exists for a reason. Everything we do is founded on the policies that are created. And I feel to make insinuations about what the policies say, and we don't really know what that means. I mean, why do we even have policy if we're just going to say, oh, well, this policy says we can have this information. But it doesn't say you can't, you know, we're just making it
what
up.
Why is it a policy? But what you're saying is really important, Stephanie, and I think we found this. In other board policies, that when a situation comes up and it in fact isn't clarified in policy, it reminds the board that it needs to be. That we don't have the clarity of that in terms of the intention of the policy. And that's a problem. And I think that is the reason that I'm suggesting. And I guess I would ask if we could have clarity around that and provide for that, is 3 days or 4 days or 5 days going to make a difference in terms of gaining access to this information? I don't know that it will. We do that board information in a way that's actually moving us forward. And so...
Well, I guess my question is, if you're okay with us accessing the information, why wouldn't you just say that and then say we need to tighten up our policies from here on out? In my mind, it seems like you're going to create a policy that actually is going to put a policy in place that would stop us.
It's a good question. But for me, the policy is to clarify how and what information is accessible.
Right, but in my mind, if you're not going to give us access, and you create a policy, are you trying to create a policy that stops us from that? Or can you just say, you know what, we won't talk, we understand what the intentions are, we're okay with giving access, but we need to say that the policy is not forward. They're two different things.
Well, see, when you study the policy and you've been in policy for 2 years, you've provided to the ISAB to set those points, also.
If you don't want to go to policy, I'm fine not going to policy. But you go through the detail to find out why things are on there or not on there. There are precedents. There are, you know, statutes. And that, you just can't go and make up a policy at the district level because you need to be against the Illinois state statutes. I'm not saying you are here. I'm not studying it. You've got to study it with...
Well, so does the district's authority.
Right,
you didn't give us a state statute.
Well, that's what worries me, too, because you got coming up... some opinion, right? It's an opinion. And there's a rationale behind that opinion. It could be flawed, I'm not going to argue with somebody who just wanted to move to school. That was that good news. My good news.
You disagree with the intention of the letter.
The two things that he quotes as reasoning for not giving us access to the closed session audio, because it's number one, part of the oath which board members take in accordance with section 10-16.5 of the school code provides that a board member has no legal authority as an individual, dot, dot, dot. It doesn't have the rest of that. Sorry. That was to direct. Okay, it says, the rest of that says it has no legal authority as an individual, and that decisions can be made only by a majority vote at a public board meeting. Well, to that, I would say we were not directing Dr. Gordon to do anything. We were just asking for access to information, so I have no idea why that is being quoted as part of his reasoning.
I think it's because the request was made, as I mentioned earlier.
All we said was, when you're seated, this is something we'd like to do.
I'm just saying that it's in the context of the request.
And the second thing says, section 2.06E of Illinois Open Meetings Act provides a relevant part that unless the public body has made a determination that the verbatim recording no longer requires confidential treatment or otherwise consents to disclosure, the verbatim recording of a meeting forced to the public shall not be open for public inspection. This applies to all of these individuals sitting out here in the audience. It does not apply. We have taken an oath. We are elected officials. The Open Meetings Act applies differently to us as elected officials than it applies to the general public.
These are the two reasonings he's given for why.
That's why that statute was made. And what did you read a consequence about that? Because that is for that moment in time.
They said that when you're elected officials, you need to, part of your job doesn't matter, but our job now is we have to know. It doesn't matter that we were in that meeting. Our job, part of our duties as board members, is to determine what to do with those audio recordings. How can we determine what to do with them if we have no idea what's on them?
We're not going to go through the statute,
We're not opening it for public inspection. We cannot talk about what that is. Well, if that's the case, then he should say they can absolutely not have access. He's not saying that. My point is, if that were the case, wouldn't Mr. Crawford be saying, based on this, they can absolutely not have access. That's not what he's saying. Well, kind of because of these things, I guess if the full board has to approve it to get them access, he is not saying that we would be breaking the Open Meetings Act if we had access to it.
What he is saying is that he provided for the board because this was an unusual request, the statutes that have bearing on any executive or closed session. That's what was in his letter.
What statute
was
it?
So I'm at 2.06. It's in his letter. Also, you can pull it up on his phone. I need to ask one more time. Direction from the board. At the end of my meeting with Stephanie, we talked about some specific areas that she and Kurt are most interested in. I would ask the question, is that direction we want to go in? Well, that's a person. Stephanie and Cody are not going to ask the board because they do not believe they should have to ask the board. So, they're in that little bit of twilight zone.
So,
I get that.
Yeah, so we're trying to do this. don't let, they don't have to ask. I understand.
What's the flow of board members in terms of moving forward?
You're both going to have open meetings and training in this week.
That's great.
So you'll be done with the meetings and training.
I'm already at it. So, as a park board member.
So, you have to.
I don't know.
I think you have to take it again once you get elected.
No, I'm going to do it. But, yeah. But.
Yeah. So my concern is not what information you get to move on. My concern is to make sure that we're not breaking a rule by opening that to board members, the board members. That's the only question.
But you can't be breaking the rule, Mr. If you were breaking the rule.
I knew that's your opinion. I'm asking to get an opinion.
No, I'm not. It's not my opinion. I'm just saying, Mr. Faulkner does not say if you grant them access, you're breaking the rule. He just says,
I'm asking. As a board member, I'm asking that question because I don't want to be breaking the rule. If there's precedence or rule that says we can't allow other people to use those kinds of things, I don't like those. But that's my only hint, is that we had other board members there, and you two were board members here. So I just want to make sure that when we do this, we're not going to be breaking any rules there. And you'll have the training by this weekend. You both have said that, you get it. You can't take these things out and put around in the social media and things like that. You have to keep them where they are as a board member. So I get all of that. But I want to know that part.
Yeah. So your question is,
we don't break a rule by going forward. And that should be pretty specific in how it should be done.
About the opening access to audio where the current board members who are not a part of that are likely to be privy to that.
Ms. Lettinger says, assign the above statutory provisions to Ms. Clark and Mr. Buckle's request. They are entitled to listen to full session audio recordings only if authorized to do so by the board. With that authorization, they are acting within the scope of their authority as board members and not as individuals. With such authorization, they are individuals who have no greater legal right than any other individual citizen to listen to audio recordings in full session, which is due to employee evaluation. Without such authorization. So he's saying, if you give us authorization, we are acting within the scope of our authority as board members. He did not say.
So the thriftiness of it, he says, why are we going back to spend some more money about something that he's already
He doesn't say that we are going to be breaking law, breaking statutes. He quotes these examples, but he doesn't say, nowhere in here does he say, if you grant them access, are you violating open meetings? And I would assume that if that were the case, that he took the time to do this, that he would have included that in there. So, in my mind, I disagree with him that we have to get approval, but he nowhere in here does he say that we are. You will be breaking any
so
law.
So you're questioning whether you like them
I'm just saying, I don't think as elected officials, as I said, we consult the council when they agree. As elected officials, you shouldn't have to ask for approval to get access to information. I do disagree with that, but I'm saying he does not say that we are breaking any law by doing this.
Asking another question of Mr. Faulkner that he's already answered is just wasting money. The taxpayer money to get that question answered, he's already answering it.
I would like to the board has discretion as to whether authorized access.
I would like to recommend that we ask Stephanie and Kurt to put together from the verbatims. You had said you were going to look at the verbatims. We're going to look at the written minutes to see which meetings you felt were most important in terms of having that background. You had said to me, all your team was...
Only if we give you the ones you like that we give you.
Let me finish with that.
I
think it's important that we're able to determine the audio tape that we feel like you most need. And it's, I just think that this is a fair request. When you had said to me in our meeting,
I think we need to make it a statement, it's irrelevant. I thought I would promise that I will not listen to the that one session, I keep going, I call it consulting, but I know that's not.
This is board self-evaluation.
Self-evaluation. I can assure you, I will not put that on the list, but I can't promise what other meetings I will or won't listen to. I don't think I need to provide a list to
Control rooms. It's Stephanie and I talked about this in the meeting that we were in together. We had that conversation.
I have to provide a list to resolve it.
I want to get consensus on providing access to Stephanie and Chris on listening to a closed session audio. So recognizing they are board members have completed their oath of office.
I'm willing. I was just going to add, I'm willing to wait until after I've taken my training so that I feel more comfortable that I've officially had my opening exact training. I'm willing to do that.
Make
a decision tonight, but I'm willing to wait if that makes me more comfortable.
I'm following Todd's advice, so that last paragraph agreeing with the consensus of the board allowing access to it. So I'm following Todd's advice. So are you giving them access?
Like I said before, and they give it
away. So that was your direction, though, as an individual board member, to give them access.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I kind of know where you two are at.
I would provide access as well, recognizing that we had this conversation, it's on the record, and that we were all able to give our input, whether people agree or disagree in terms of our intention. I want to recognize that each of us has a position, and it comes from a point of concern for some, interest in terms of information for others, and wanted to do the right thing.
Yeah, right. Look at this. It's like, you guys are demonstrating it. That's important. You got yourself. My question initially was, you don't ask me. I don't have a problem saying you should have access to the case. I don't want to step over on working with you. I'm going to take his recommendation quite less than expensive, but if you guys are asking the board for this.
I'm hearing as superintendent that the board has given me consensus to authorize Kurt and Stephanie to access closed session after they even would go to the whatever that
second.
So from that moment on, just reach out, let them know sometimes, or more importantly, Nancy, right? I'm like, let's just be real about this.
Is to go back and look at the issues that were raised tonight and to really look at how and if the policy is underdeveloped or not stated what it really needs to state. Then we put this back to you, Joe, which is when we do our semi-annual discussion around just the closed session minutes, how that's framed. I mean, it's It's written exactly like other local elementary policies, because I did look at that. But I want to close the conversation by saying thank you for having it. Thank you for listening to it. But also recognizing that this was a really important conversation to have, and not one that any of the board members took lightly. And respect all voices on this as well. So thank you. Other action items, consent agenda.
No.
Okay. Any of the board members would like to move from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Right, hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes, we just moved through, human resources, personnel report, execution that our guest has been updated, employment recommendations and resignations. Item 2, finance, facility and operations, school district payment order, April 22nd, 2015, 26, 2015. Item 3, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, May 4th, 2015, special reorganization meeting. We have a motion.
Motion.
Second. Motion second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Wojcicki?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mr. Wojcicki?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Board reports, two really brief ones. I mentioned last week that Dr. Rano was going to be at the LEN meeting, which he attended last week. Dr. Bodie was there, Dr. Kodak was there, I attended. And what LEN was able to do in the brief time that he was there, he spoke for about 15 minutes and didn't really give any insight on direction of pension reform or direction of the state legislature. What we were able to give him by the LEN was a PowerPoint that focused on three districts, a community district, a high school district, and elementary district, and particularly the general state aid that has been lost for the time, which is totals a little over $2.4 million for elementary. So we're hoping that he will use that of his education to our guys, and we'll provide some feedback to us. I've been seeing in the paper that our pension reform is kind of on the back burner because of the state Supreme Court, but there will be some decisions coming down, and it's kind of our budget process is what it is. And this reminds me actually of 4 years ago, about 6 years ago now, I think, where we did some really strategic cuts in the budget for the land administration and some other, where we took out $3 million in order to level set our budget, and then we also identified another 30% cut in the budget, and we stayed in the black the entire recession, and that was a huge opportunity for us to make sure that we were staying ahead of the curve, so I know that we'll do that again. A little word with us. Okay. Upcoming meetings. May 26, 2015, Finance Committee of the Whole, 6 p.m. here at the Central Services Office, which is the entire board. May 26, 2015, that night again, regular board meeting at 7:30. And then June 8th, the regular board meeting at 7:30 here at Central Services Office. Other matters, we have committee assignments in the orientation meeting that we had earlier. I walked through our committee assignments, and we had a request from board members to look at 221. I had put it down as rotation assignment for 1 year, but I'm going to go back and look at the contract, and you guys have copies of it now as well, of course, to see if we can have potentially two members serve on that, which may help support when people cannot make it. The other thing I mentioned is that we've had discussions in the past about board reports and having more structure around them, so we're going to put together a template that we can look at and people can give me feedback on, so that we have a tool that is easy to read and it is affiliated to the news as well. So that was committee assignments. The other is 21st Century Learning Initiatives, which was a initiative information that Stephanie Kurtz sent to the board through Paul, and we should all have a copy of it. It's going to be 11. Anybody have a copy?
Right, I'll turn it over to Stephanie Kurtz.
the school?
Basically, we put a proposal together that we believe that we need to do as soon as possible before this school year, do a follow-up survey to evaluate our 21st century initiatives. Basically, conduct an online survey of teachers, grades 2 through 5, parents, grades 3 through 5, and students in grades 4 through 5, which would mirror what we did last year and evaluate teacher specialization in multi-age. And we also set that certified staff that interact with students in those grades to also survey. The reason we were kind of minimizing it to those grades versus the whole district-wide survey that we did last year was to just minimize costs and those endpoints that we were looking at. We thought it could be done for minimal cost if we just had school perceptions do the exact same survey they did last year that's already been developed, with the one exception that any questions that centered around specialization should be expanded to break it into two parts, one for level 2 and one for level 3, because we feel that there's definitely different feedback that you'll get based on specialization in those grades based on the age of the kids and the tutoring level of the kids. We talked about the timing, the cost. We don't know the cost. Looking if we can give Dr. Gordon some direction and move forward with it to get costs. I know when this was talked about last year, the cost was well below $10,000, so it didn't require board action for Dr. Gordon to move forward once it was decided we should move. And once it was, we started moving forward with the survey. But cost last year from their school perceptions report was $3,400 for the development of the survey, which I would assume would not be necessary once it's developed. $2,700 to administer it online, and I'm wondering if maybe those costs could be reduced because you have a lot much smaller pool of people that you're asking to take the survey. And then $2,800 for online results, a report, and then a plan of action where the team will present it at a board meeting, which I think we need the report and the data, but I don't think we need them to come and give another presentation necessarily because we're familiar with the information and how it was compiled. To try to keep costs as minimal as possible. Really the reason we're bringing it forward is that the 21st century initiatives were supposed to be evaluated for fidelity, satisfaction, and effect. And we feel an annual survey is key to evaluation of this program. Since we've heard a couple of times that a new initiative can take 3 years to get good data, we feel we should be conducting surveys every year to find out where we're at. We've already delayed multi-age two times now, and there were some concerns and negative comments on the survey last year, so we would like to be sure that we address these. And the survey is key to gathering data in terms of social and emotional impact because test scores cannot measure this variable. One other thing that I wanted to point out, Mr. White in his presentation at the beginning of the meeting mentioned how a survey was important for input. And I think that's the case in this instance too. And this is just my off the record, just from looking at my own children and talking to other parents. I know there's been some concerns with our MAP scores this year. I'm not making a general assumption for the district, but I know there's been some concerns of lack of growth with our MAPs this year. And I know we're not going to have that information until June presented to the board, but I think we need a survey as another piece of data to truly evaluate how we're doing. Maybe we'll see a trend that I'm wrong. I think we can be on this. I hope I am. But I think that's a piece of the data for evaluating what we're doing that's important. I would follow up and say, I think later on, maybe in the fall, and I talked to Paul about this, we need to do a comprehensive survey of the district that really evaluates all of our programs that we're implementing, from 20th century initiatives to special ed, dual language, PBL, and anything that we're doing within our district, I think we should truly evaluate and know where we're at with all of those different things. But I think for right now, it's key. I'm just hearing a lot of feedback from parents about what's happening. Many of the teachers as well, we think this survey would be critical to get now before the school year's over and everything's fresh on people's minds before the school year.
When we ran on making sure that we were listening to the customer. So in my business, I'm in the customer business, so it doesn't mean I'm perfect, but I have to listen to them. And, you know, I just think that, well, I'm out of business. So the difference here is that we have a guaranteed revenue source, but we still need to listen to the customer. And so one of the ways that we can listen to them is to allow them to survey. And with all the changes that we've made, we have to, you know, as Stephanie said, we have to keep track of this, and we have to keep how they're feeling going forward. So that was one of the things that we talked about. We talked about in our coffees. We talked about in our forums. We were getting feedback from people that they want to have a voice. And they asked us to sit up here and give them a voice. And one of the voices that they can have that we can go back to them is to allow them to fill out a, you know, survey at this level. That's not to say that we don't think we should be surveying at other levels, but this one we felt from a priority standpoint was the most important. So.
I know that as part of the engagement plan, the surveys were included in that. And so it's not coming out of left field that, you know, that we have this request. You know, in the list of initiatives that you sent to Paul that you forwarded to the board, this is one of those, so I know it's important. And it's been important to the board, and we talked to Paul. Also, just to touch on the program review, that's why on our calendar, where we have those particular presentations built in throughout the year, part of that is to have program review as a part of that. And I'm using that as a generic also evaluation, because that's a part of it when someone reviews the program, there's an evaluative piece and a special piece of that. So that's in place. My question, one thing you said that I think is important is we had the MAP scores presented to us at Hadley or Board meeting, and it was Mr. Monahan that came at that same time. And so my recollection of MAP assessments, and these are not tests, they're assessments in the moment, and I think that that's a confusion for parents. We found if we need a testing tool, some assessment tools, so we can see growth, right? And my recollection when I looked at these and we looked at the PTA Council is that our score is based on the NWEA median, because we were above all those. So we are seeing growth. And so come June, we'll see how we match up, you know, spring, the fall, winter, spring now, because we do that second testing in the summer, which is helpful. So I think that's important. I just want to say that my understanding is that we actually were about the median and all of those, correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, and then we were the one that needs to assess that, so put that together. So I do think that that's important. There's a piece of information here missing, though, and I think it's important because Paul talked about this, and that was the meetings that the board directed Paul to have with all the stakeholders. So at every building, with all the teachers, with staff, open meetings where people could come and speak with you one-to-one if they chose to. We over a period of months, what were the months from?
End of November through January.
End of November through January, right. And that was with Mrs. Coffin, our assistant superintendent of teacher and accountability. So that information is what informed Paul to come back and say, we will not be moving forward with level two multi-age. You know, which I was glad to get the recommendation. It wasn't ours to vote on. There was no action taken. It was a management decision to do that, and it was based on feedback directly from those meetings. So again, I just want to say for the record that the board directed Paul to have those conversations, and my understanding is as they went on, they became better attended. I think you told me there were maybe one or two teachers that were able to attend, which was not to attend. And that's powerful information because it's verbatim and we're getting it. What we're asking here is for us to look and take a look at this. And my real question would be, I think a survey is important. We need to do this. My only concern is that May is absolutely crazy. And I wonder if part of where we might get some more value is if we did this immediately coming back to school for September, where teachers could reflect and look at the end of the semester scores to be able to look at literally their grade reports, how their students ended in terms of their reading scores, their practice and finality, all those pieces. And again, I'm putting this out there because of the concern of having fatigue to do so many things in a really tight time frame. And we know because we feel the teachers are busy. And so I would want there to be a good sample size. And B, if we provide some thought time, some reflection time, we might get some better responses, both pro and con, depending on what it is.
I mean, I think if you're doing just self-set up a survey, it's a very short survey, and there's that might be taken unless they spend time putting comments in. But I think,
which I would hope, because I think that that's
helpful. I think that teachers, it's my understanding they want to get this feedback. They want this vehicle and way to provide this feedback. And my concern, if we delay it, some teachers, they're not going to be I have heard that is their big concern with level two.
I can't remember what that statement was, but I was that it was, they want to move, and we have a small sample size.
Okay, I talked
to them. But we're saying, let's do the survey.
Like, teachers tomorrow.
The emphasis is for her to say, let's ask them.
I don't think anyone's dictating the survey. I actually, you can go back and read all my emails from last year. When you guys created the survey, I told you specialization should be broken out by level two and level three, because I think that is a big point with a lot of people, is second and third graders are a lot different from fourth and fifth graders.
Absolutely.
And so this is not the news that you're hearing from me. So my point is, if we're going to do it,
realistically, it's easy for us to sit here and say, they have X time in the world to do this, but you're the one that oversees your staff. They know, you know through principals what the next 4 weeks or 5 weeks are going to look like. And what I would hate to have happen is have people do it and do it quickly and not give it thought, but just kind of do a push through. And that's not, it's not good survey protocol. But also, you know, I appreciate you giving this, giving the guidance on the questions. Again, I would go back to our surveyors. And actually, I personally think the most important piece is to have the expert that can run the data come back and present it to say, here's what this means. Because putting the ball in the package and then really having it presented well is the thing that gives you insight. So I would err on the side of paying for that. Because I think that the insight that makes a difference.
Can we agree that we see a need to do a survey and hand it off to Dr. Horn to say, can it be done before the end of the year? Can we go back to the ask them questions, get the pricing, and let him come back? I just don't know if there's a point in that. We can sit here and debate it all, but it seems like...
I really want to know whether or not it's realistic that school perceptions could do this at this point in time.
We have a policy, believe it or not, that is 6.30 on instruction. And what it talks about is organizational instruction. But what we do is we look to you and tell us how you want to do this. So rather than have us create this up here in a new perfect way, I would rather look to you and say, in this policy, it says a superintendent shall annually present to the school board a plan for organizing instructional levels and assigning them to school facilities in order to support the district's education program, maximize facility usage without overcrowding, and provide substantially comparable instructional programs. So in doing that, we've asked you before to go through the rules. I would do that again. If we're going to do a survey, I would like input. I would like it to come from you, that you can take our advice that we should look at this. But I think our policy says that this is worth it.
There's other pieces to this we want you to look at. And so I just want to say I appreciate, I know that this is part of your interest, and it's certainly something we've already talked about as a board in terms of breaking down climate surveys versus instructional surveys, et cetera. So it's definitely on the radar. It's a timely issue, and it's whether or not school perceptions can support this at this point. So I want to get feedback.
Go back to the recommendation that happened whenever this came out a year ago. They said about every 18 months we should be doing it. That is what school perception said that night. That's
that's where I was heading for every 18 months or every next fall to do it. But if the board says there is room at the time to do it.
But no,
so,
the board is saying go do it. The board is saying, based on the request from Stephanie Group, to go back to school perceptions and say, there's a modified version, what does this mean? How might this
Well, there is a question. I mean, it is too much on our plate. If the board wants us to do it, we'll figure out a way of getting it done. But I'm just going back to, we talked about 18 months, which is the time frame that they recommend.
The professional.
Well, is that for conducting just a survey of the community, or is that me? The premise I was going on is we implemented a major change and we're kind of monitoring it, and you said we were going to evaluate it for fidelity and patient satisfaction. I think that may be a separate timeline than just doing the community satisfaction survey. I could see that being every 18 months. But
that's the question that I have looked at and wants to look for there.
I think that should be asked, it's not just a satisfaction survey. We're trying to truly measure how we're doing things against the data points. So
well, the other question that I have too, and this goes back to again timing, is again from their perspective, since they're professionals that do this, is there a better time and a not so great time to survey? And again, I want to emphasize, but I also want people to be able to be thinking this through when they're giving information, because I don't want them to survey garbage in and garbage out.
One of the things that I just, you know, we're talking about not scoping.
They know this.
But there's some other thing in everyone. Young learners is a subset. Young other learners, you will have a different opinion about it. Am I in the subset? Am I in that big subset? Or am I in my own, bend out of the gym? Am I overlapping? Or am I with them? And to me, I think that changes how people think, act, and what answer surface.
I think that's the question.
I'm just trying to say that forces me to go in going after that thing that's done. I just want to think about that.
Consensus. The question is, let Paul to give a call to school perceptions and ask the question around the, I guess I would describe it as a subset survey and cost. Make sense this time of year from their perspective, and they do it with you professionally, and make sure that we're advised correctly, because I don't want to spend money on something that's not going to give us the information. This is my opinion. And when would be that next time that we can then level up on this and get this going?
It's based on this modification, and also getting me back on.
The value of that, the relative value of doing it now versus now.
But are other board members interested in modifying the questions? Because I would need to know that.
So that's my point.
I think we have to have consistency.
Well,
so that's the question.
That's the question. I mean,
the question is,
you guys are modifying it.
But do you modify it?
Does anybody else want to modify?
Yeah.
And I'm just asking, if you're going to do that, just give it to me sooner rather than later.
So our suggested modifications aren't adding questions. It's really just to clarify, because I feel that the data that we got last time, we had a question for example, would you recommend that the board should move forward with specializations? I think that the response is different if you have a second grader than if you have a fifth grader. So I guess yes, I am asking questions, but I think it's really more just clarifying the question so the data that you get is useful to this.
Yeah, I think that's what Joe was asking earlier.
I think we should, as I said, I feel like there needs to be survey data to be refined and ask about everything that we do, and then could you include using on that?
Well, the reason is part of the question. The question is moved around. My question is, you know, people are asking school perceptions union changes, or union changes, even if the question is not critical for one or two members versus another, it's quite likely you shouldn't be getting union.
No, they're the experts.
They're the experts who are dealing with union issues.
Yeah. And I think you understand what the tension is.
Do we have consensus? Again, repeat the question. If you go forward, ask for perceptions this fall, this spring, does that make sense to do the survey? A very similar survey to the one that we had around multi-agency specialization this spring.
I think we're setting ourselves up to fail you, because whatever the answer is, we're going to come back in 2 weeks and talk about this, and then we're going to ask them to cobble something together in 7 days to get it out before school's out.
I think that, Ken, that's the question. Does it make sense? And I think they'll say yes or no. Here's our experience. We do this professionally. Here's an alternative to that, and then they can give us some insight on a different. They'll give us some insight on a different direction. There's a lot of moving parts here, not the least of which is time. So. I think it's worth the question.
As far as my understanding from the last year, if school perception says yes, it makes sense to do it, yes, we can do this, yes, we can come up with questions. I think the cost, it can't cost more than it did last year, which is less than $10,000. So probably to need approval to move forward, but right. He can start moving forward with that and then update us in 2 weeks. We all agree, though, we can get the answers that we think are acceptable and it makes sense to move forward. So, he doesn't need our approval.
I'm not going to say that because I just thinking about these math scores coming out and coming with this whole presentation of how our students did for the year. And I think it's important for the teachers to know not only their subset, but the whole. So I do feel that. And that's my rational thought. Now, with school perspective, that deal was in the area for the survey. I'm all ears. But I want to get the feedback from that.
But that's what the stuff is just said.
You could get that.
But I think the only way school perception is going to lose that June 5th deadline is copy-paste survey series sent out. I can't remember how long did it have to sit out there. It's not like this is a turnaround survey of 2 days.
I think it's
2 weeks. Again, that's just general. I think we're about 2 weeks, so we're talking at least 3 weeks right now. But if I start working on this tomorrow morning, perceptions, I think it's going to be the finish of the class to get this thing back. I'm not sure how many weeks we have left.
During the school year, if you're getting an access code from the access from the personal computer,
I don't know. It's a different question.
I don't know. I think it needs to be done. Now,
in my gut,
go.
It feels really rushed. It feels like if we can do this in the fall, it will be a better place for us. I really do. I just feel like right now, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, it feels rushed. I absolutely respect everything that you're saying. Could we do it? We probably could. We probably could. Is that what you want? Is it something that's rushing through? I don't know. My recommendation would be do this early fall. And we have that out there for them. That way, board can also get that feedback on those types of questions. But I think that's important. I think it was. I mean, to Joe's point, making sure that all those pieces are there for you, that you're asking the questions you want based off of the academic achievement data that's sitting there. That would just be my record. It does feel rushed. Just 3 weeks.
The concern for me, though, is the reason we're asking for it now is that we can have a conversation as we're making decisions what we're going to do next year. If we do it in the fall, we're going through, we could be getting answers that are maybe showing that there's some, I'm not saying maybe there's some mistakes or decisions, but either way, now we're going through another year where if we take the information back now, maybe there's some ways we can chart or we can adjust things and say, maybe this isn't working, or maybe we need to do some things here.
That's a big adjustment on the levels. We're going to it was clear by the principals and teachers that if they need to make small tweaks along the way, they were doing that. It was a large decision-making, like around second and third. that had to be, had to have time spent on that. But the tweaks and adjustments by that would do.
So would the survey be then, I mean, that's new, would it be to stop any of those? I would think that the people that are experts here would want to know this stuff sooner than later. I guess I've been leaning on the experts, the teachers in the classrooms when I've asked those questions. Karen and I have asked those questions, but
you and I have
the quality.
Oh, that's what I was saying.
But I know that you and I have had the conversation, and it's good that you're having those. But we also know that when they do anonymous surveys, if you're going to get some different answers from people, then they're going to tell you the truth.
So,
to answer the question, no, we're not saying that we're using this specifically to get rid of things. But for me, and this is something that when we sat out there, we're constantly asking about is all these components we need to be doing. And I guess the sad part for me is that this board and that you guys didn't do this soon. I mean, you didn't start to prepare this in March. I mean, it's not like we haven't had people ask about it. So that's a concern for me. But we couldn't do anything. Now we're moving forward. Just to look at the things. I want to know, we do hear from people that have great concerns. And, multi-age has been taken off, but that's about it.
That's what we were doing. I like the survey thing. The rush part, I get a little nervous. The third graders, the fourth graders, the fifth graders are taking part this week. We wouldn't bother that.
They're not taking part of it.
So let me turn this direction. So we're asking Paul's context or perception. Let's spend an inordinate amount of time on this, but to ask what their professional opinion is about surveying at this point in the semester with a modified question, set of questions. And whether they think it'll yield, I think what Stephanie could have presumed is going to be kind of data that we want to look at and what I would hope would be good data. But that's the question, is whether or not this makes sense right now. That's the question I think we're asking.
There may be valuable information in those comments, those frank, honest comments from the teacher, and they may be more high level, but I would think administrators would want to know, okay, these are things we need to be.
There's no question that Paul's team is always asking these questions.
I'm just saying, an anonymous survey, you're going to get, I think,
a lot of feedback. We just need to find out from your perspective whether or not it's valuable. I wouldn't get it. Now, I don't care what it costs, but is there value?
I still feel a little rush.
Yes, is there value?
Sitting out there like Bruce Curry, I asked in the fall about doing the survey for the same exact reason. And I was told, the answer that I was given is, we're not going to spend any money. We're just going to buy the central survey. That's the answer that I was given, which is not an acceptable answer.
But in addition to that, we directed Paul to physically make sure that he was face to face asking questions.
Paul, you're going to have to go out and talk to school perception board. Ask them what they think. And so I guess we're
going to have to. And let me finish this because we've done with this conversation, that school perception. Let me try and wrap the conversation up, and that is, because we're saying the same thing over and over again, at least that's what I'm doing, okay? And so, Paul, we're not giving you a do it in the fall, do it now, do it in the spring. What we're asking is that school perceptions, who's the expert in this, who has already worked with us, to have them give us feedback for the request. That's the question.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else? And then can you let us know? And we can let us know in writing and we'll have to. All right. So I'm reaching out to that consensus to reach out to school perceptions, ask the questions, and then get back to you. Right. Yeah. Thank you. Nice discussion. I'm opening up to the consultant. And so I want to thank everybody for being here. This is a really good example of a new board figuring itself out, which I'm happy to say. Is done with all good intent, so I appreciate board members' time and your time here tonight. The board has determined it has need to adjourn to closed session to discess the appointment, employment, compensation, dissipation, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of a district, generally, or council for the district, including hearing testimony on a state lodge against employee, or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. They have a motion to adjourn to closed session. Second?
Roll call, please.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Alexander?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. The board will not be taking any action following closed session with me to get to go home.
It will be up in 209.
Return to open session at 11:59 p.m. We're back in open session. May I have a motion to adjourn the May 11th, 2015 board meeting?
Motion.
Second. Who said motion? Second. Joe? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I don't think so.